Hi everyone, you're listening to the Designer Cast, a podcast where I talk to lots of different types of designers with different backgrounds and different experiences. My name is Mariam Habibullah and I am the host of this podcast. Today I speak to a guy named Michael Wong, who is a very experienced designer. He has worked for places like freelancer.com, Hipages. He's designed for Spaceship. So he comes and talks to us a little bit about how he became a designer, what sort of things he was interested in when he was young, things that he has learned along the way on becoming an entrepreneur, and just really gives advice to young designers who want to step into this industry, which may not be the most conventional sort of way to become a designer. Have a listen. Let me know what you think. Send me an email at thedesignercast@gmail.com or send me a message on LinkedIn if you've got any feedback.
First off, thanks for having me. My name is Michael Wong, better known as Mizco online. I guess my journey really started from gaming. I used to be a gamer when I was around 14. Spent a lot of time after school playing games. I started to build, I started to accumulate a lot of like rare items at the time. And I thought to myself, like, it would be cool if I could trade them or like sell them to other people. I went to more of a Catholic school. So I was surrounded by quite wealthy families. But at that time, that was the only school that would accept me. So I was forced to go to that school. My dad actually picked up another job just to make sure he could cover the bills.
Wow.
So I was surrounded by all these like wealthy families. Everyone was like buying lunches and I was given like the same sandwich for the past 7 years. And then I realized I'm decent at gaming. I've got these rare items. I'd love to sell them, make some pocket money, buy some lunch or whatever it was. So then I was like searching online about like, oh, how do I start a community, I start a forum? And I found a service called Envision Free, which would give you a free forum. And all they would do would be, they would place ads on your forum and they would generate revenue through that way. Through that, I started to build the community. It actually became one of the most active gunbound forums online. And then from there, I started to download a copy of Photoshop and I wanted to like design my, like, personalize the theme of the community to make it look nicer and stuff. So I started designing a bit of graphics, started to dive into the HTML code, and from there it just snowboarded and now I'm sort of like a UX designer. Okay. And that's where it all started.
So did you end up making that lunch money?
Yes, I did. Yes, so from there it was a very interesting journey from starting the forum to actually selling some items, and then also I started putting ads on my own forum. And that started to generate revenue. From there, I started to learn more about affiliate marketing, which is like when you're putting advertising on a website, it's somewhat like a form of advertising, right? So then I went down the path of affiliate marketing for the next sort of 3 to 4 years. And that taught me a lot about design, which is actually ironic because like people think, oh, marketing and design aren't really the same thing. But I strongly believe that as a marketer or someone who understands marketing, you actually have a very strong foundation as a designer because you really dig into like the needs and wants of like customers. And
so do you think someone could transition from marketing and design very easily?
Definitely. So if you actually notice, a lot of lead generation companies, which actually generate results for companies, they, for some reason, designers will always say, oh, the landing pages just look terrible. But hey, they actually perform a lot better than people who focus, who come in as like sort of like the labeled designer, because they're not too fussed about the visuals. They're more fussed about like the needs and wants of customers. Mm-hmm. And I feel like as a designer, we are solving problems by delivering solutions that customers need or want as well. It is interesting. I think like that's a debate on its own, but I really do feel like marketers are very strong designers. Yeah.
So after you went from doing those boards and stuff and you finished high school, what mm-hmm. did you do after that?
After the boards, actually during high school was when I spent a lot of time doing affiliate marketing. Okay. I built the forum, put some ads on it, learned that, oh, you can actually make money online, and that opened up a whole new world for me. Social networks started to become more and more popular. So at the time it was Bebo. What else was there? I think Facebook was in its very early days. It was MySpace as well. I sort of went down this path of like building websites and landing pages to sell products online. So I was using ClickBank, I was using CPA leads, and I generated a ton of different websites selling a ton of different products. And I did that for I think I was around 16 till 20 or 21.
Physical products or digital products?
Digital products. And also CPA offers, which is like cost per action offers. So if someone, for example, inputs their zip code into an offer, I get paid for that as well.
Okay.
So I spent a very long time scaling a lot of these campaigns, and I was just working by myself in my room. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was actually a very profitable time. And then that led me into working for freelancers. So after 4 years, the market became quite saturated. A lot of people started to jump onto the bandwagon. They heard about, like, you can make a lot of money by selling these products and stuff. And then after that, yeah, I just sort of moved on and thought I should try work in the industry, work okay. with some smart people yeah. and see what I can learn from there.
Did your parents wonder where you were getting all your money?
Yes. So the bank actually, St. George actually locked my account
oh, really?
And pulled my parents in to go inside. Like, they had a secret door. They opened the door, pulled me inside and actually questioned me like where the money was coming from and stuff.
Oh, wow.
And my parents were like, they had no idea what the hell I was doing. And I had to tell them like the whole story. I'm like, no, I'm not drug dealing. this is a real story as well. Yeah, I was like, I'm not drug dealing. I'm actually like just selling stuff online. I had to print out all the evidence of like what I was actually doing as well. Mm-hmm. So that was a very interesting time.
How do you feel about people who are wanting to do this kind of stuff when they're in high school, but their parents or their teachers are telling them, no, you're going to go down this path?
So I actually went down that experience because I come from a Chinese migrant family. Parents sort of, my sister went to Sydney Girls. I think like at the time it was like the second smartest school, mm-hmm. very academic. Parents sort of like expected us to be, I don't know, doctors or whatever.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
The whole just like, yeah, the stereotype of being an Asian.
Yeah.
And I came through as like a creative. Mm-hmm. Well, not even a creative. I was just online playing games. And at first, my parents really despised that. And I was actually had very limited time on the computer. I would have to do all my homework. I had to do my chores and everything just to get like 2 hours of free time on the weekend. Mm-hmm. Just so I could play like Red Alert or like Gunbound or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
As I persisted, as I showed that I actually could make some money out of it and like there was actually potential in this field, my parents had to let go of like trying to control like the path that they wanted me to take.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of like just trusted, they just said, if he loves this, if he tries really hard in this, maybe it will grow into like a career or something that's going to be profitable, viable, like for his future. They made a good bet on what to take. And I think like, yeah, it's sort of, and it was just like a good decision and a good place to be where the technology, the industry was booming, where I was just like the perfect time.
Okay. So, what about for kids now? What do you think?
I think for kids, even like when I plan to have kids, it's that I don't want them just to do what they love, what they're passionate about. I also want them to do something that they're good at,
mm-hmm.
because I think there is the whole talk about, just do what you're passionate about and stuff. But in the end, if you're not good at it,
mm-hmm.
no one's going to pay you to do it. It's like sort of false hope. If you're doing something that you're good at, but you're not truly passionate about, I feel like as you're patient about it and you continue to persist and you try harder and harder and you start to reap the benefits of it and you see the value in it, you would naturally build passion with it as well.
Mm.
I would definitely provide guidance. I would see where my kids, or like when I do have kids, like see what they're passionate about. And then assess whether or not there is actually potential in it,
mm-hmm.
And then sort of guide them to something that's gonna work. It wouldn't have worked with my parents because it's just technology at the time was so different, and that could happen with myself as well. Like when I do have kids, in maybe like 4 or 5 years down the road, technology might be so different, and I might not understand the landscape of where we're working in.
Mm.
But I would try to understand and come in with an open mind.
So, how long have you been doing UX design?
I honestly don't remember when the formal term of UX actually came to be, because when I first started designing, it was all about web design. People were looking for web designers. When I started to actually work with UX was probably definitely when I was at Freelancer. So I was around 20 to 21. Freelancer.com is like, I think it was like one of the world's largest freelancing marketplaces.
Mm-hmm.
When I wrapped up my affiliate marketing gig for myself, I decided to work in the industry for 3 years because I just wanted to say I've worked in the industry for 3 years if everything fell through for like my businesses or whatnot. So freelancer.com was one of the first startups I worked for.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I actually started the whole UI UX role, mm-hmm. in that company.
How did you go from high school to something like that? Did you go to uni in between?
Or? Nah. So I think a lot of the stuff, everything that I've done is self-taught. I think what I did show during that interview process was that I had the grit, I had the passion, and I showed them the projects that I worked on, took an idea all the way through execution, made money from it. that's what they liked about it. Mm-hmm. I had no certification. I had nothing. Just passion for what I did. The lead designer was like really convinced, and he was like, "Oh, I'd love to bring this guy on board." Majority of the team is engineers, and the CEO is very growth driven. The way that they were thinking was beyond their time. You hear about growth, growth hacking, and like all the growth and all like the product market fit, all that talk that we hear now. I feel like no one was actually talking about it, but at the time, Matt Barry, the CEO, was all over it. We had charts like behind the scenes. We had metrics that we had to drive. There was just a lot of very interesting things that we were doing at the company. I think freelancer.com at the time was a very good place to be and to learn as well. I'm really happy. And looking back, I feel like it was one of the best places that I decided to work at. One, I was working around very, very smart people. They had a very strict sort of hiring process. Mm-hmm. So one, there was a lot of smart people. Two, we had the opportunity of actually dealing with millions of users at a time. So any change that we did actually allowed us to see the impact very quickly. Yeah, so as I'm a very results-driven person, so being able to work in that environment, I was really thriving and I was learning a lot. And I think three, it was just at the time, that brand was very well known, a very reputable brand. I'm not sure how freelancer.com stands now in the sort of like startup and business world, but at the time it was definitely one of like Australia's like largest startups.
What made you decide to go, I want to go to work rather than formal education?
I've never been the academic sort of student. So OC, I failed that. Selective school, I failed that. I actually did put down a couple of courses for UTS. I failed all those. So I was just like, okay, well, there's no one to go. There's nothing to do. So I'll just focus on what I'm doing. And at the time, I was already making money. In my parents' perspective, money does drive this world. If I was doing something that was actually making money, just continue pursuing it. As long as I'm not dealing drugs,
yeah,
they will find it.
Yep.
Fine with it. So I think it was just natural that nothing else worked. And I was just forced to go down this path. Mm. And I was extremely passionate about it as well. Mm. So that's why I think I continue to persist. And like 10 years, 11 years now, mm-hmm. I'm actually still doing the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you mentioned self-learning. How did you teach yourself back then? Because back then I don't think there was like, you know, Udemy and things
there
like
was,
that.
There was, exactly. And I think that's why I feel like being self-taught at that time really showed how passionate I was about it. There was no formal education, no nothing. There was no courses online. No one knew what the hell they were doing, to be honest. Even at the time, HTML and CSS was so... It was so dated and so it wasn't even thought through. Like nowadays, if you want to add a shadow on through CSS, it's just one line. Mm. Back then, you couldn't do that stuff. You had to export a sprite out, chuck it underneath the thing, position it correctly, mm-hmm. make sure it's cross-browser compatible. We had to do a lot of stuff by just trial and error. Mm. I just threw myself into it, tried to understand like how it's working. I would inspect the code, and it was just literally trial and error without anyone teaching.
Wow.
Because even like if you're talking about like online mentorship or like chat rooms and communities, not many people were on that type of stuff either. Mm. So it was just very hard to learn. If you were really passionate about it and you had the time, you can definitely make it work.
Mm.
So that was pretty much it. There's no secret to it, just trial and error. I was thinking about all the growth tactics at the time, and I was only 16, 17. I started off solving those type of problems. To this day, the services that I provide, like the UX stuff, it's all about results as well when I talk to my clients.
Mm-hmm. Why did you choose UX instead of something like growth hacking or starting a startup or something like that?
So along the journey, I've done a growth hack for my own startups. I growth hack all my own ventures, provide growth hack strategies for my clients. When I'm working internally at startups like HirePages and Freelancer, we're all doing growth hacking stuff.
Okay.
But I feel like because I can also design, I feel like design is just the medium, the tool to gain results. I think differently, some designers will see design as an art discipline in itself. I sort of see it as just a tool to get results.
So what kind of motivated you to keep going, to keep doing this kind of stuff?
I think my goal in the end is to actually just have a startup of my own, or like a nice small design studio with a team of maybe like 10 to 20 people, and where we just churn out great products. Like that's nirvana for me, mm-hmm. where it's just less about the chase and just like sort of be creating things on our own than having to like build products for other people. And yeah, I think 2 years ago we were sort of like probably like a third of the way there. We had a team of like 8, but I decided to pivot. The way that I had built that agency, which was the first like formal business that I had actually launched, it wasn't aligning to the vision that I had. So I think it was very hard for me to try change it, because we had so much momentum in like doing client work.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to pivot that into doing a startup. That startup failed, which was an extremely big learning experience. Mm-hmm. Now I'm sort of like trying to reach that vision once again.
You mentioned this startup that failed. Can you tell me a little bit more about how that started and what kind of failure, what happened?
So after working for Hipages, which was I think like 4-ish years ago, I decided to freelance again. And freelancing was going very well, so I made my first hire. And then after like a year and a half, we had around 8 full-time employees in the team working on UX projects and product design projects. From there, I felt like we were just churning out products for all our different clients. And I love that. And I love building the team. The business was extremely profitable, but it just did not align, like I mentioned before, did not align to where I wanted the purpose of it to be. So I decided... And met another co-founder of mine of Ladder. His name was V. We met, and he was running a dev agency. So then from there, we both had aligned, and we had common interest, and we both had like a mutual a vision that we both wanted to make happen. So we're like, okay, why not? Do we have any ideas or any problems that we're facing, and do we want to try solve it together and bring the teams together? That was probably the biggest mistake that we did, was to actually prematurely build a team when we didn't really need them at the time. So I feel like when you're building a startup, which is what everyone talks about, is to start lean. And we were preaching that to all our clients as well. I was hoping that maybe it will kick off if we like put like heads down and just like really work really hard. We were burning nearly 6 figures a month just on expenses. And that was bootstrapped as well, no funding. So I think it was a very, very amateur mistake. Mm-hmm. But at the time, sometimes it's just there's excitement, like you let your emotions take over and you're not very sort of like practical about like what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So I sort of let that slip and we're burning too much cash too quickly. And obviously to solve that problem, a marketplace for software engineers, it's not an easy problem to solve either. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of interest from companies that were interested in actually using the platform. We had done the pitch, they were keen to sign up, ready to make the payment. But it was just a very interesting problem to solve because, especially in Australia, we are so short on good talent that all the good software engineers were actually like, they don't need a platform to look for work. They actually get work sort of like coming into their inbox like literally every week. Recruiters, companies directly. Then we were left with a pool of software engineers, which either they were probably great. They were actually great, but they required visa sponsorship, or they were just software engineers that no one really like wanted to hire as well. So we're left with the outliers. So it was a very interesting problem where we realized maybe Australia's just, the timing is just not right within Australia. Cause I feel like with products, it is timing. We had features like video interviews and all that, which is a big thing in America, but no one really does it in Australia. So that was very interesting as well. Just the timing and the landscape that we were working in and what people were open to and what people were used to as well. So through that, I think from a business point of view, learned to keep expenses low, which I think everyone, it's a very amateur mistake that we made, but also in regards to like understanding product market fit, timing, usage, understanding how open people are to products, how familiar are they to like the to the features that we had, also plays a big play in sort of the success of a product.
Would you think you'd bring it back up again if the timing you felt like it was right?
Yeah, potentially. I think V and I did agree that when the time is right, maybe it does come back again. But I think it will take time. Like Australia is just so far behind with the rest of the world in how we operate. It's just, everything's so dependable on like still like contract, like paper contracts and stuff. When I'm like, I signed up for a new office space, we're still like signing everything pen and paper. It's just crazy. And they're a new establishment as well. So you would think that they would have like a new process or new method to keep things more efficient, right? But they don't.
Yeah.
So I just feel like we are always a lot slower than the rest of the world. And I think it just take time for that to happen.
You've worked overseas, right?
I've worked with clients with overseas.
Okay.
And I've also had the opportunity to go overseas, but I haven't because I just, for myself, as a personal thing, is that work is will always be work to me. Family and friends is just like, I can't leave them behind. So. But I would love to. And I think it would be an interesting opportunity as well.
What did you see differently besides the way that we do things slower or more inefficient? Is there anything else that you saw in the States, I think you went to, that we could probably be doing to improve here?
In regards to like design or just business?
Business efficiency, like, things like that.
In a business sense, America has 340 million people or 400 million people, somewhere around there, right? So they have a larger pool. So that means their economy is a lot stronger. They've got a lot more money circulating within their country. So their investors are able to make bigger risks, because let's just say your product, you ship a product and you burn through, let's say, 2 million people, you still got like how many, like 300 million something people to burn through, right? Within Australia, you burn through 2 million people, you've got like 20 million left.
Yeah.
Like you don't have much left, right? That's like 10%.
Yeah.
So I feel like with Australia, the reason why we're slower and the reason why we're less willing to take risks is because people don't want to waste their money. They don't want to just throw money out into the open. They want to make calculated risks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I feel like about innovation, product innovations, investing into UX and design is still a little bit lacking, is because of just the market that we're in is a lot smaller as well. In the business sense, I think we do understand that we want to be more innovative and we do want to move quicker, but it's just the people that we're working with and like the country that we're living in, we just don't have enough people to actually sort of fulfill that need. I think with design, all these other in America, especially all the big tech companies, they're able to lead sort of like the whole design thinking, the whole design world, and yeah, because they have got more money to throw around and spend, they can actually invest into their design teams. And if they can invest into design teams, then their responsibility is to come up with new processes, new techniques into research. I don't know what it is that they do, but like they actually have that time and that money to actually try new things. With here, I feel like with all the companies that we work with, it's like we need to A/B test it. I think it's right to A/B test, but it's always about, okay, deliver the results and like let's move on. Like with this, it's increasing like the conversion rates or whatever it is, and then we sort of move on. We don't like continue to test and try new things, because it's all about just getting results straight away. It's less about innovation.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's really interesting. Hopefully we can change that doing like the way that you're saying, I'd like to change that at the Iconic.
Yeah. Yeah.
To do things and keep testing.
So
just moving on.
So what's something that, what are some like the tests that you guys do? Because it's obviously e-commerce, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're trying to do new things. Like we just launched drone delivery.
Oh yeah, I saw that. I saw that on LinkedIn. So, that was really interesting.
We're trying different things, and then we'll test on that and expand and like, it's, I guess it's hard. I guess if you, like you said, it's about money. Like if you don't have the money, what can you do?
Yeah.
What do you kind of love most about what you do?
I think it all comes down to sort of realizing that what I design and what I think about is actually used by someone, and like the impact that has on their life.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, like at Freelancer, people were actually getting an entire website, an entire business built on the platform. It's just fascinating to realize like the work that we do actually impacts people's lives. And I think a lot of the products that I've done recently, like for Spaceship by Investment, Snapper, which is like a hiring platform for photographers.
Mm-hmm.
We built a dashboard for Australia, for AMO, which is like Australia's energy marketing operator. They manage their entire gas infrastructure within Australia. So we built a dashboard so stakeholders could actually pull data out from how much is gas is traveling from Sydney to Brisbane, how much is being paid for that.
Wow.
Like just knowing that our work is actually being used by real people and it's making their life better is fascinating.
Okay.
And I think that drives me.
Yeah.
And this will be like sort of a internal sort of, it's like internal value, because like every day is going to be new problems to solve.
Mm.
So it never gets boring. It's like always something different. I think in terms of my favorite, it would actually be the AMO project. One, it was just a great team.
Mm-hmm.
Two, it was just so different to all the products that I've done. I've been in many different industries. I've done health, like fintech, I've done health tech, I've done fitness, large spectrum of stuff. But gas sounds very boring, and it was bloody boring going like trying to understand like gas flow and like the how a pipe is structured, but trying to come up with a visual dashboard representation of Australia's how pipes are being laid out, where does the gas flow go, how much does the gas cost, and trying to come up with a dashboard which solves all these problems was really, really interesting to me.
So challenging as well?
It was challenging. Like I was referencing how Australian Transport New South Wales was doing their train line sort of a chart to show where trains are going from. We were studying how other countries did it as well, just to see how they actually laid out that type of information.
Yeah.
Very different to what I normally do. So I think that was a very interesting problem.
Okay.
Yeah.
You were saying you wanted to pivot your design agency. Have you done that?
I actually recently sold the agency contracts. So a lot of that Mizco Media, that company, has actually been winded down just so I can keep everything clean cut. And I've started like a new agency called With Yoke. It's the same sort of like product design agency. We're already working with clients already. IEG as an insurance company, a ticketing platform, and a few others as well. Trying to start something new, fresh, without sort of like the Mizco brand attached to it, and seeing how far that goes.
Okay. If there are other people out there who are, I guess, freelancing and want to start their own companies and stuff, what kind of advice would you give them?
I think always start lean. Learn from Ladder. Also, this was a discipline that I applied when I was building out Mizco Media, is that you don't hire for the sake of hiring, and you don't hire because like it's an exciting idea, but you should only be hiring to keep up with demand. Only when there is demand for a new hire, that is the only time you should try hire someone.
Okay.
Because if you prematurely hire someone, it just adds unnecessary stress. But I guess having that capacity when you do hire someone for growth is good, because when you do hire someone and you don't have enough work, then you can actually bring on like more work without worrying, okay, can we complete it on time or whatnot? But definitely only hire when you really need to, and try to keep your processes and everything as lean as possible.
Okay.
That's like probably my top tip for someone starting out.
How about when it comes to like, I guess, winning clients and stuff, how do you kind of do that?
I think with winning clients, this is a very interesting question. A lot of designers ask, it's like they go, oh, I actually talk about this on my Instagram recently. It's about where can I go to find more work? Mm-hmm. That is the wrong approach if you want to build a sustainable career as a freelancer, or you're looking to build an agency.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of the most common responses are like, oh, you can go to Upwork, oh, you build a Dribbble profile, you can go freelancer.com, or you can reach out to clients. I feel like that is the wrong approach, once again, to answering that question. If you just want to pick up projects, that's the right approach, if you just ad hoc projects. But if you want to build something that's going to be sustainable, just imagine yourself having to go out to try to convince people and like somewhat get potentially like nagging people to give you a project, only to find out that they don't want to do it with you anymore. And then you go to the next person. That's extremely tiring and demotivating. So I feel like from day one, people need to change the mindset to actually create a personal brand that pulls clients in, make clients want to work for you. And I think there are some people who would argue and say, oh, Mizco, you've been working for X amount of years. People know about your work already. That's why they come to you. I started from zero as well. I feel like everyone starts from the same base. So from day one, I was actually, back in the days, I was 17. I talked about this on Instagram, is that I dressed up as a bloody ninja. It was just so embarrassing. I did not want to launch this light, but I like sort of animated myself out. I was using jQuery. I animated myself out from the side of the screen. And then I popped up and I called myself this web ninja. Mm. It was radical, it was stupid, but people loved it when I launched it. And then I submitted it to like over 30 CSS design galleries. It got featured. Mm. And then I think it just got featured because it's so different to what everyone else was doing. Everyone just had the same bland portfolio. And then clients from like America, Australia, like international clients as well, they all reached out and they're like, oh, love your work. I had no work on my portfolio at the time. I had barely done like any client work, but they love the presence of my website.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, love your work. Would love, I have a project, XXX, whatever, right? So from there, I learned that being different, as Seth Godin would put, like be the purple cow, right? If you're driving down towards a farm and you see a purple cow amongst like all the other cows, you're naturally going to be interested in that one. You're like, why the hell is it purple, right?
Yeah.
So being different taught me that I do stand out, and people do want to work with people who stand out. We don't want to just work with another designer, right? If you see someone that's sort of like they're a lot more outspoken, they're very different, they're more creative. From day one, I've always kept to my guns and said, I'm going to be different. Mm. Whether it's stupid, whether people laugh at me, whether people don't agree with my thoughts, I will sort of put myself forward. I'll always put myself forward and do that consistently and just try to be different, but also be myself as well. And I think over time, over the last 10 years, it's just the personal brand, the value, the clout of that brand has just sort of snowboarded. And I've never really had to put a finger on sort of direct marketing.
Yeah.
Every day I am posting on social media, which is sort of still marketing, but it's just snowboard effect, and everyone will sort of like know about the brand, they know about me, know what I do.
Yeah.
And eventually when I do need work, there's already stuff in my inbox and I'm just picking out the ones that I do want to work with. The industry is a lot more competitive today, right? Reaching out to companies and saying like, I would love to do some pro bono type work with you guys or whatnot, maybe will expedite the process, but being different will definitely be the quickest way to success, in my opinion.
Okay.
Just to stand out.
Have you heard of Gary Vee?
Yes, okay. I do. Yeah.
How do you feel about that whole hustle mentality? Because you've worked in like startups and stuff, and you really have to hustle, and there's, you know, burnout and stuff. Have you ever experienced something like that?
Yeah, I think burnout was probably like one of the darkest times in my life. So I was at my quarter life crisis. I feel like the burnout led to my quarter life crisis, which was a very dark time in my life. Prior to that, I truly believed in the hustle life. I was working literally 12-hour days. I think it definitely does pay off though, right? Like I was around 21 and I already had two properties. I was reinvesting all my money into investments. Nowadays, I feel like when I look back on that, I feel like that was a very toxic and very unhealthy way of living. Mm. All that meant nothing to me if my mindset wasn't happy. So I feel like the preaching about the hustle life is very dangerous and it is very toxic as well, especially to the younger generation, because they don't have the experience in managing their emotions and managing like that type, that lifestyle. I feel like when you're older, I feel like you can sort of like experience that a little bit more, but you also know how to manage your responsibilities and your time as well. I feel like in the end, everyone needs to balance. We're all just human. We're all the same. You can't just work for the rest of your life. Yeah. It's depressing.
Yeah.
You need to have fun. You need to have friends. You need to spend time away from the computer. Mm. And it's just healthy for the mindset. It's healthy for your creativity as well. The preach about hustling, I feel like it's a great way to hype things up, a great way to get people interested. But I feel like to actually live through that, it is very hard. It is very tough. And even for myself, when I love hustling so much, I can't do it that much.
Yeah.
As much as he says to do it. And I feel like sometimes you do need to just clock off. You do need to watch some Netflix and just chill out. Because I love that stuff.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah, sweet. So when you mentioned like turning off your computer and doing something different. Mm. So besides, I guess, design and your company and things like that, what else do you love to do?
So during summer, I like surfing. I'm picking up snowboarding. So I'm actually heading to the snows in 2 weeks and going to try to pick up snowboarding so I can like switch between like winter and summer. I can do a bit of surfing, a bit of snowboarding. Recently, surprisingly, I actually find pottery really interesting.
Nice.
So picked up pottery at Pottery Shed in Surrey Hills. That was really fun. So I learned how to like throw, you've got your clay, you throw it into the shape you want, trim all the excess, and you like refine the shape, make it smoother, you add patterns, you do all that. And then the third class was glazing. So I just wrapped up glazing. You paint it, you can do undercoats, you can make like different patterns on the cup. So then after that, you'll bake it again. And then you get your actual like the final sort of like product. Yeah. Mine was actually terrible. but I think I'm definitely going to go back, do it again.
Yeah.
And I think it's a very interesting experience.
Yeah.
It's very mesmerizing because as you're like throwing the clay, it's like spinning and you're just concentrated on like all the sort of edges. You're making sure it's smooth. You need to make sure like you don't have cracks in it.
Mm.
It's just a really fun experience where it really forces you to like switch off and just focus on one thing and your mind's not running around.
Yeah.
So that's really fun.
Yeah.
And I think just music events, I like heading out to music events.
Okay.
Spend time outside, like outdoors.
Yep.
And yeah.
Okay.
That's about it. Yeah.
That's really good. You're getting out away from the computer.
Definitely. So
it's really good.
It's really good. Yeah.
Just general advice. What would you give to junior designers who are coming out of their courses or who are just coming out of high school and they're like, this is what I want to do. What kind of advice would you give them?
This is from the experience and the journey that I came from as well. So I feel like a lot of people are being taught very formalized. The whole formal education of design, there's this like end-to-end process. If you're doing research, you got to use this methodology. It doesn't matter about what tools you use. It doesn't matter what method you use, what framework you use, right? In the end, as designers, we are just problem solvers, right? It doesn't matter how you solve the problem. As long as you can solve the problem effectively, that's what matters. A lot of people, when I do mentorship at like Academy XI or GA, they ask me, oh, like what apps do you use and stuff? And I feel like that is such a common question, but it does not matter at all what tools I use.
Yeah.
If I was given this problem, where should I start? How do I solve this problem? Those are the questions that we should be asking. It's as a designer, we're solving problems. Doesn't matter how you solve it. You use whatever tools that you have, whatever methods you know, and you just have to try achieve that end outcome.
Okay.
My tip to juniors is sort of less about the tools and methods, more about the actual like building a project on its own. So if you have a problem that you're facing or an idea that you want to build out, build it out. see how far you can take it, see if you can actually make money from it. Mm-hmm. I think that process and doing that stuff, that hands-on practical stuff, is actually going to teach you a lot more than formal education or like asking about like what tools to use and all that.
Yeah, cool. So you mentioned you started your new agency with Yoke.
Yeah.
What kind of other things, or if any, are you doing now as well with your time?
It's a very interesting time for me now. I'm actually starting my own UX product design course. It's called Ambitious UX. So if you jump on ambitious-ux.com, I've got like a whole landing page and a like quick video just to explain like what I'll be doing. So that would be a course that's very different to what we're sort of like what we see online and also at like GA and Academy XI. It's not a linear process. I feel like a lot of the courses that designers are taught is this linear process of user research, and then you do a bit of like wireframing and prototyping, and then you write some user stories, you design it, then you test it, and it's this linear process. Product development and design is not linear at all. Mm-hmm. It's so agile and so ad hoc that you wouldn't even believe it if you're a student and you're graduating. You're just like, why are they doing it so wrong?
Mm.
But that is just the real world. Mm. And that's just how designers need to operate as well. And this course is to really set the right expectation for designers about what the industry is like, and teaching, like I said before, less about a process, more about the concepts and the mindset of how you should be solving problems. So it'll be a very different course. And that's one of the biggest projects that I'm working on right now.
Okay. Is the course live? Yeah.
It's not live right now. I've just started working on it.
Okay.
But on Instagram and on the website, I'm trying to share sort of like the process of it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if like designers have ideas, they throw it in, and then I might take that idea on board. I might integrate it into the course as well. So I'm trying to be as transparent as I can,
mm-hmm.
give people updates to let them know it's coming soon,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully it goes well.
Where do you see yourself, I guess, in 5 years in terms of your career?
5 years time, I've thought about sort of working for someone again, because I've just been doing my own thing for so long. I definitely couldn't see myself sort of being like a designer, like just a designer.
Mm.
I think the next biggest challenge for me would actually be leading a team of maybe 50 or 100, right? Mm. Whether that's my own company or that's within an internal company, that is one potential route. But I don't think that would happen, because I feel like I'm just so in love with sort of like building my own companies and so passionate about that. So I think in 5 years time, hopefully the course does really well. Hopefully I've also launched like a course for UX for freelancers, also like a sales course for designers as well, like how to pitch design, how to do a sales pitch for a client. Hopefully I have like a few courses that are out, and hopefully that becomes like an own venture on its own. I have my design studio as well, and maybe like a product that does extremely well. Who knows? Five years time is a very long time.
Yeah, it is a very long time.
Yeah, so I think if you're a designer that you're starting out, I think the industry is booming. There's so many like interesting projects. So I feel like definitely do whatever you can to get yourself into the industry before others, because I think there's an influx of new designers coming in. So definitely get ahead of that. And if you want to follow my journey, you can follow me on Mizco on Instagram or Twitter. I'm most active on those two. And if you just want to find more about me, just mizco.net.
All right. Thank you so much for coming in. I've learned a lot.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad that you came and spoke. And I think you're going to help a lot of people who are listening as well.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks for having me.